Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We are here today with Christine Carlson, author of the moving memoir, Heartbroken Open, a book she wrote after the loss in 2006 of her husband and business partner, Richard Carlson, known for his best-selling blockbuster books, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Welcome to the show, Christine. We are so excited to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Hope. It's so nice to be here with you. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And we're going to start by just giving a little background on the book and the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series. And Christine, so you shared this beautiful book that you had a romantic marriage, two beautiful daughters, and thanks to the success of the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, you had all the comforts of the American dream. But on December 13th, 2006, you write in the introduction that perfect story took a sudden turn when on a typical flight to New York, a pulmonary embolism took Richard's life. You say that it catapulted you into heartbreak and uncertainty. And in the end, it was the end of life as you know it, but the beginning of a journey through the depths of grief and mourning. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the book, Heartbroken Open, and how you are, where you were, and how others can learn from your experience.
Well, you know, that first day in 2006, it was December 13th, and, you know, that day for me started out like any other day. You know, I woke up. Richard had already gone to the airport. He'd spent the night before at an airport hotel because he took a 6 a.m. flight to New York typically so that he could work when he got there. And I just woke up, just turned over. I always talked to him before I got on a flight, and I missed that phone call by 5 minutes. I had overslept, which was unusual for me. And then I, you know, did my morning. You know, I did breakfast dishes. I went about my day, got my kids to school, who were both teenagers in high school. Freshman in high school was Kenna, and then Jazz was a senior. And, you know, I pulled into a mall parking space, and my phone rang, and it viewed the New York area code 212 at the time, and I looked down, and I thought, well, that's an odd number. You know, Richard must have called from his hotel. Maybe his cell, you know, his battery was out or something. So I answered the call thinking that Richard was calling me to tell me he had arrived safely. And instead, you know, there were two strangers on the phone. There was a nurse and a doctor. And they just began firing questions at me, you know, like, are you related to Richard Carlson? And I'm like, yeah, I'm his wife. Who are you? You know, and they were like, well, this is Dr. and Nurse so-and-so. We're calling from the Jamaican Memorial Hospital in Queens, New York. And I was like, kind of started to get very confused, and they told me that they had Richard with them. And then they asked me if I was parked, because I started questioning them, like, well, what do you mean you have Richard with you? He was on the plane. And they just said, you know, we're really sorry to inform you, Mrs. Carlson, Richard Carlson has expired.
It's breathtaking.
And, you know, just that word alone, expired, you know, I mean, it's like here you're living your life, you know, in the full-blown midlife. You know, I was 43, Richard was 45. He didn't have any health problems that we knew of in particular. He suffered back pain, but no dramatic health problems that we knew of. And so you just take any day of your life, and all of a sudden you get that phone call and that word, and it doesn't translate in your brain. You know, you can't even grasp what somebody's telling you in that moment. Like, you're just really just absolutely just stopped, and you just go, what? You know, like, I really went slightly insane, actually, like just, you know, left my body. I mean, I got really angry. I started yelling at these people, like, you know, as if they were playing a joke on me. And then I realized when they said, you know, they started talking about his flight and how, you know, and I asked when, you know, like I just, that one question, when, and they said an hour and a half ago, I just, you know, I was like, an hour and a half ago, in my mind, I couldn't even, like, I knew it was over. You know, it was like I just knew there was no turning back. And it was absolutely devastating. I mean, to this day, the feeling in my body comes back to me, and it was just devastating. And then I realized I had to tell our daughters and tell his family and all of his friends and all of his colleagues, and it was just a mind-blowing experience. But what really shocked me, Hope, was that I didn't really know, like, that I was living kind of asleep to my life, you know, because when you're in the throes of life, raising kids, you know, being the wife that I was to Richard, you know, sort of holding everyone's space in our lives, you know, I didn't realize that I wasn't living as awake to life as I did right after I started to realize that this grief and this suffering that I was starting to move into in healing from loss, you know, allowing grief to come into my world and my life, you know, it sort of rocked me so deeply that I sort of like went, wow, I mean, I'm really feeling my life at such a different level now. And it was just shocking to me because I wouldn't have ever looked like a woman who was living asleep before, but the contrast was so dramatic for me, the contrast of what I was feeling and the depths of life that I was feeling. And I would walk outside and I would all of a sudden see the trees and the sky and the wind would blow, and I would just feel it all at such a much deeper level than I was feeling before. And these are the things that I started to realize were, even amidst the horrible pain, I mean the horrible pain of healing, I started to realize that these were the gifts in the experience, that somehow deep in me, you know, this philosophy that Richard and I had lived our whole lives, this don't sweat the small stuff philosophy, you know, about how to be happy in life, really I started to realize that all of those tools that I had were going to be put to the test. And but I just knew, you know, in my heart I had the wisdom and the strength to go through this experience. And I, you know, I kept praying the whole time that I would come out the other side, you know, better for it, you know, wiser, deeper, more in my heart, you know, more. I had hoped that I would return to joy. And I can honestly say, you know, after about 3 years of really very up and down roller coaster kind of living through grief and loss, I finally did. And to now, I feel like it's just my life is about deepening my own life purpose, which I feel very much in sacred contract with Richard about that, you know, that this was sort of a necessary, unfortunate necessary part of my growth.
Wow. So many questions pop to mind, but let me ask you, what was the day that you realized that you would be okay?
You know, I think that I knew, right from the very beginning that I was going to, you know, I knew that I was going to live through this. I didn't know what life was going to be like, you know, I'm thinking it was like within 48 hours I really had this talk with myself. And I can remember exactly where I was sitting in my house. It was very early one morning, and, you know, there were a lot of people around, but I got up so early. And I remember just sitting with myself and having a very strong conversation. And it kind of went like this. It went, wow, I can't believe this happened to your life, you know. This is really effed up, you know, this sucks, you know, this is like, wow, you know, never anticipated this in a million years, you know, couldn't have seen this coming if I ever even tried to see it coming, but it's here. And I remember saying, you know what, you have had every amazing blessing that life has ever given anyone. Like I've had just, my life has been charmed on some level beyond charmed. And I remember feeling that and really noticing that and realizing what an incredible life Richard and I had had together in 25 years. And I also remember feeling the horrible, like, loss of that and just, like, how am I going to do this? But also knowing that this is just part of life, you know, that this was a part of life that I felt like I had just entered into my graduate soul work curriculum, you know, that I felt like in my philosophy, this said, you know, everything in your life is there to teach you something. I felt a little bit, I want to say, ashamed that somehow I needed this. And you know, I felt like I wish I had been living more awake before this happened. That's just something that I had to reframe and work through. You know, that was my initial feeling, which is pretty normal, you know, when you're going through such a shocking loss. You know, you go through lots of different feelings. But I do remember just knowing that I had to stand in this and I had to just really kind of work with what I'd been given and do the very best that I could through it. And I remember accessing that feeling of inner courage that it takes, you know, that almost a defiance in me that said, you know what, I'm not going to let this take me down. I am not. I have two children. I have to live my life. I have to live in honor of Richard. I want to live in honor of him. I want to honor my own life in this world. And I've got to find my way through this. And that's what the book Heartbroken Open is all about. It's really that, taking that idea of, wow, I need to learn as much as I can from this experience, because otherwise what's the point?
Absolutely.
You know, like, why would we go through that kind of horrible pain and that kind of horrible suffering if it wasn't going to transform us into something new and something better, hopefully?
I think that's definitely the mark of an old soul, to want to teach people based on their pain. So, you know, I really appreciate that. And it brings us to this great point about talking about the book, in which you discuss the four aspects of recovery, surrender, trust, accept, and resolve. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. And also, is there any way to speed the process up? Can you just jump from surrender to resolve? Or do you feel like this, as with the seven steps of grief, do you have to go through them all in sequence?
Well, my feeling about grief, Hope, is that there is no sequence to it. Like, my feeling about grief is that it's a roller coaster ride and you're all over the place. Like, I didn't notice that I went through necessarily stages of grief, although I wasn't tuning into that as much as I was just allowing myself to heal and giving myself permission to really befriend my grief. Like, that was something that I noticed that was really unique about the way I went through grief, unlike most people. I think most people are terrified of grief and they want to busy themselves through it and hide from it and get through it quicker and faster. And I think what happened for me is I started to realize that, you know, that my grief would need to be emptied out, and that this was something that I didn't know how much time it would take. And I don't know how much time it takes for people. I think it's an individual process that we all heal in our own time and in our own way. And for me, you know, not fighting was really the easiest path to feeling free again. And so when I say surrender, what I did was I just allowed myself to be fully expressed in the moment. And I often would feel my body teach me that I wasn't being fully expressed. So I would, for example, wake up with a stomach ache and my stomach would hurt, and I would think, oh, why is my, you know, oh, that's grief. And then my next thought was like, oh my God, I want it out. I want it out of my body, you know, get it out. And I, you know, because I just felt like grief was like a cancer that could grow. You know, it was so painful and awful. And you know, I felt like I needed to let it out. And so I would just allow myself to go into my feelings about whatever I was feeling. And I found that the more I expressed, the more tears I had, the more I would express through my body this grief, then I would feel better. You know, and that's sort of the natural indicator, is that, oh, tummy ache goes away because you allowed yourself to have your cry you needed to have today. You know, and this process for me went on for, you know, I'd say a good the first year, pretty substantially, but I had sort of a rhythm I noticed about every 3 days in, 3 days out. And that meant that I think that your own psyche has this way of indicating what you're capable of doing. And mine was, I could grieve for 3 days at a time, and then I needed 3 days of a break, you know, and that's sort of how I rolled for that first year. I was often triggered by the events that happened without Richard, but I realized that the anticipation of those events was far worse than the actual event itself. Like I would worry about the event, and then the event day would come, you know, without him, and it would be fine, but the anticipation process was really painful. So, you know, there was so much I was observing and learning as I went, and it was actually a very, it was like being in a massive workshop, like for a whole year, you know, or two even, like, because the second year was still pretty messy, you know, the second year I felt a lot more like grounded, not as in the ethereal plane of grief, but, you know, I felt a lot more grounded, but it was still messy. You know, it was still like, wow, now I have a lot of things to learn, and I've got to gather my reins on a bunch of stuff, including, you know, mailing lists and business stuff, and get my head around the fact that, you know, I'm now taking over this, you know, international brand that my husband ran. And thank goodness he had included me in so much of his business and his business decisions, because I kind of, you know, for the old model of the author launching books and stuff, I definitely knew how that business was run. And since then, you know, as you know, the whole internet thing and all that has changed everything. So I'm learning, learning as I go, like every other author out there. But, you know, it's been an adventure. It has a journey and an adventure.
So how part of the daily operation were you that enabled you to take over like that?
Well, you know, Richard, at that time, you know, Richard was really just, you know, he would write a book a year and he would launch those books. And at that time, that was the model. That was how authors did their work. You know, they wrote and then they launched and then they wrote again. But he always, you know, kept me abreast at everything. Like he would, you know, we talked about everything. Like Richard was a very take care of, like, don't leave any stone unturned kind of guy. Like he really kind of, I think, knew, like, wow, there's the possibility that anything could happen in our lives is there. So he didn't want me to be a woman that was not capable of doing things, you know. So he made sure that I was. And part of that was when I wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff in Love with Him and then Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Women. You know, that was really smart on his part. I mean, we weren't in a place financially where I needed to, you know, write Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Women. But I think from his wisdom, realized not only was I a powerful writer and I wasn't, you know, he already knew that and I didn't. And so it was sort of his way of gifting me a portion of my life purpose, you know, like saying, Chris, you know, come on, step it up, step up to the plate. You know, you can do this. Because I didn't want to write that book. I was, like, really not seeing how I could manage my life as a mother and my life as his wife and also write a book that turned into another New York Times bestseller and then live that life, too. You know, that was, like, not in my game plan. That sounded like way too much to do to me. But on the hindsight of that, it was so wise because I understood, you know, every step of what it took to run a publishing business as far as an author goes, and even right down to, you know, how to market it and how to go out on tour and how to do interviews and all those kinds of things. So it was very wise on his part, and I'm glad that he did that.
Wow, that is such a beautiful gift, and a gift that you've given the world, your insights and your perspective. This particular is very touching and so honest. You know, I really appreciate that you wrote it, and I think that other people who have lost people that they love like that will benefit from being heartbroken open.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I really have the benefit of hearing from widows and people who have lost somebody through death, and even divorced women who have gone through divorce, men who go through divorce. They go through the same heartbreak, and they have the same possibility. I think in some ways that might even be a little more challenging because it's harder for the person who didn't really want the marriage to end to come to terms with that, I think. And there's more anger and there's more of all the bitterness that happens in divorce than there most times. I'm not saying all times, because there's also that in the kind of loss that comes through death. But I do believe that Heartbroken Open provides a template of healing, and it's a very old and wise model I've come to discover. I didn't, you know, I just followed my intuition and didn't read any books. I just, this mantra, surrender, trust, accept, and receive, was a mantra that I learned with Richard way back in our 20s. It was really kind of a way to shorten the serenity prayer, you know, and I think that we lived by that mantra throughout our lives, and I noticed especially when things were difficult, you know, that surrender, trust, and accept was something that we repeated often and over again. And when I was in grief, I just kept realizing, wow, I have to surrender to this. This is not something I can change. This is not something I can fight. This is something I need to surrender my whole being to. And doing that, you know, I just trusted every moment that I would be given everything I needed to heal, and I was. And just the grace that came through and was around me in that, you know, first and second year was astounding. I mean, I felt like the Divine Mother and Father were just bathing me with love. I mean, and my kids too. And you know, I felt really, really held from my community, and I just felt super blessed when I went through that really awful, hard process to feel those things.
It seems too like everything that you learned from the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, which is how I came to find you guys, because a couple years ago we did an interview together after I read about his loss when I launched Incandescent magazine in 2010. I had wanted to interview him because Don't Sweat the Small Stuff about money has been on my bookshelf since it was published. And I refer to it regularly because all entrepreneurs worry about money and cash flow and will this keep going? And I always found tremendous solace in that book. It was very comforting to me. So it's beautiful to hear you talk about how everything that he is really, it came through you, and now it's in this new book, and you live your life. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is pretty amazing. It's you know, all those things, you know, you know Richard and I were just living our lives like everyone. You know, one of the, I think, beautiful things about Richard as a teacher was that he didn't isolate himself from daily life. You know, he was a soccer dad, and you know, he was an amazing husband, and you know, he got up every morning and made the kids breakfast and took them to school, and you know, he lived life, like really like everyone lives life. And I feel like because we did that, we kind of knew that our role on some level was to example how to live a happy life, you know. And both of us are just, you know, we were just really happy people in general. And, you know, nobody's happy when they're in grief and loss. That's just not, you know, you'll have happy moments in grief and loss. Like, you'll have your joyful moments, because that's how we are as human beings. I mean, I don't believe that we can sustain our lives without having moments of joy. Like, I think that's just inherent in our being. And so I definitely have my moments of joy, even amidst loss. But I just, you know, I could have never anticipated that I'd actually return to being a happy woman without the love of my life next to me, you know. I mean, it's like really amazing to me. Even today, I'm absolutely stunned that I can live this life as, you know, on my own and return to happiness, and return to happiness like that I feel is somehow a birthright, you know, a birthright to all of us, you know, that we have to find our way back to, you know, what's really, what really makes us happy in our hearts, you know. And ultimately, I think when you, as you evolve as a human being, you realize that the more complete you are in yourself, then that's the best place, you know, to be in life, because we are born basically with, you know, attached to our mother, and we leave this earth on our own, you know, and it's just something we have to do. So I think the more complete and evolved that we can be, the more happy we can be, you know, in life on our own, the better off we are ultimately, for sure. And even in our relationships, it's a more powerful place to come from.
and role modeling people we work with and for our children, I think is really important. And so tell us about that. Tell us about your life today, how your daughters are, your new book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms, which will be 1 year old.
Well, my life today is, you know, I've really just been realizing my life purpose more and more. You know, I try to do something like I do a lot of personal growth work, always have. I pick something every year to really dive into something different. I dove into, last year it was a mystery school, so it was an embodiment of all the divine feminine archetypes with a wonderful woman, Ariel Spilsbury. She was local here. We did a goddess circle every month, every new moon, and that was really beautiful. I mean, talk about, you know, for me at that time in my life, you know, the fifth year, you know, which I kind of find is a very sacred number coming through the fifth gate of healing, you know, with my loss, and really being able to embrace all those divine feminine archetypes was super powerful for me. And, you know, just kind of really moving into what I find my own life purpose is going to be, you know, for this next segment, because I'm turning 50 this year. So
happy birthday.
Thank you. So it's been, you know, it's a big year. I don't know how old you are, Hope, but I feel like this is a pivotal year in life. Like it's a year to really, you know, take stock, which is what I'm doing. Like kind of think about, you know, I've got, you know, a good long while left, as long as I don't have an accident or something. And I, you know, want to make the most of these years, and I'm really excited because I feel like, wow, I'm healthy, I'm useful still, and so I'm just, you know, really working out my own life purpose and kind of starting to think about another book called Living the Big Stuff, and, you know, working on, you know, kind of launching a column on that first with Aspire Magazine to see how that goes. And that'll put a lot of the principles that are in Heartbroken Open in Living the Big Stuff, but more in terms of, you know, how does anybody go through any life change and transition. And, yeah, and then Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms was just one of those amazing journey books for me because I became a grandmother for the second time this last year. Wow. And, you know, my kids, Jazz is married and has two kids under the age of three, two boys. And so, you know, I drive up to Mount Shasta every month to see them and spend time with them. I can't go more than about 4 or 5 weeks because Caden will call me up on Skype or something. He's three now, and he'll say, Nana, you coming to see me? It's time for you to come to see me. So I head up there and I spend a couple of days with them and, you know, do the whole Nana thing. And then Kenna's, you know, finding her next step in her education right now. So she's not quite been out of the house. She's 21, but she's moving in that direction. And, you know, and the kids, you know, kids are amazing. Like they really are resilient. And, you know, sure, I think that we all sort of suffer some post-traumatic stress sometimes. Mine is probably healed, you know, 90%. And, you know, I see that in them. Sometimes there's some post-traumatic stress that comes about from, you know, the dramatic shift and change that they had to go through. And I think change is hard for them. Like it's hard, you know, there's wounding that happens when somebody dies like that so suddenly. And the wounds just take time to heal, and each person has to do their own individual work around that, you know. But I've been very respectful of their journeys and, you know, just trying to assist them in any way I can in their healing. And they're both healing very well, and they're beautiful, beautiful young women. I think they have much to contribute to this world, and it's going to be really exciting to see how that manifests in their lives as time goes on. So, yeah, so I'm just writing and, you know, kind of busy trying to find my way in this new internet world and, you know, and just speaking. I'm doing a lot of speaking. I was the American Heart Association keynote speaker last year, and that was really awesome because it coincided with my book launch, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms, and they were a great, you know, great partner to be up be with, and they it was just like a perfect marriage, because it's so sad that, you know, one out of four women today are dying from heart disease, and that stress is the number one cause of heart disease. So it was really a beautiful message that I put together for them, and was really happy to deliver it. And yeah, that's what I'm up to.
It's great. It's very exciting. It's beautiful that you're so vibrant and that you haven't let this take you down. It does happen to some people. I imagine that, you know, grief just does them in, but it's beautiful to see that you can move forward. Can we ask you the sensitive question? Do you keep dating? Are you dating at all?
Yeah, you know, I am, and that's been a journey. You know, that certainly wasn't ever in my life plan. It was never even, like, it was terrifying at first. And yeah, I am, and that's, you know, that's fine. I haven't been in a place where I'm, you know, like I've said, oh, I'm ready for true partnership again, but I'm getting there. I mean, I've been dating somebody for quite a while, and we might be working our way toward more of a partnership relationship. I just, you know, that for me is, it's imperative that I have healing people in my life, and, you know, and companionship and love, and of course women, you know, men and women need sexual energy. You got to have it all. And so that's all been part of my healing too. And I'm not in any rush. You know, I just don't feel like I'm in any rush. I don't feel like I have to be. And I feel like there's some way that Richard and I are still so in partnership, and that I find that so beautiful, you know, that and I know that even this new man that I've been seeing, you know, he's so respectful, and just, you know, he so understands the depth of the love that I share with Richard, and he understands the partnership that I have with him, and that agreement and that contract is so sacred. But I also feel that Richard would completely bless me moving forward in any way in my life, that he would have said, if he was sitting next to me, geez, you got a whole lot of life to live. You know, you need to find another great partner and have fun, you know, just have fun. So, you know, definitely it's just, I think for me, it's just about, what I'm really strong at is just embracing what comes my way. You know, I'm not like a big push hard person or resist person. You know, I just sort of like, I really kind of understand how to live in the flow. And I also understand that in my own life, I have ebbs and flows. You know, sometimes a lot is shaken and happening, and other times it's an ebb time, you know, where you're just in an ebb time in your life. You can't, and I don't feel the need to push hard in ebb times. I feel that those are equally important and valuable, and during those times, it's kind of a regroup time. Like, for me, that's sort of been where I've been at the last 6 months or so, is definitely what I would call an ebb and regrouping time.
Well, it's beautiful to know that about yourself, and also to model that for others. I think everybody feels like they have to keep winning, whatever that might mean, and to realize that the win is in the flow. That's a whole other way of looking at the world.
Yeah, it's a challenge. You know, one of the most beautiful things that I noticed about being in grief and loss was that my ego was at an all-time low, and I felt like I was just so in my authenticity. And then, you know, as time moves on, and, you know, you're doing all this outer world kind of work and stuff, I noticed that my ego got, you know, kind of a little more in charge. and then it was like, oh, I don't like that, you know. So you got to have an ego because it kind of propels you forward. But I just feel like that piece for me is really always, I'm looking at that one and going, okay, you know, you need a little more time in stillness, a little more quiet time, being more present, more aware, you know, those kinds of things. Because I always notice if I have a lot of fear about stuff, then that's usually my ego, you know, it's kind of screaming at me, like, wait, here I am, you know, and so I always, like, you know, think of that, like, okay, well, what are you afraid of, you know, and I kind of move into that, I lean into the fear, and then I take a step back, and I usually it means I just need to quiet down so I can hear my wisdom over my ego, you know.
So you certainly have a lot to teach all of us, and we are thrilled.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor. Honestly, if I can teach by being an example, you know, of whatever that is, and maybe sometimes it's not being always like the perfect example. You know what I mean? Like you know, there's mistakes you can make, and that can also example in life. You know, I don't necessarily aspire to being that, you know, masterful perfectionist or whatever at all. Like I just want to share, and in that sharing, if that sharing works for somebody and resonates with them, then yes, you can call me a teacher. But other than that, I prefer to think of myself as a sharer.
Well, we appreciate it, and we thank you so much for your time.
Aww,
and we look forward
to. It's been a pleasure.
Well, hopefully we can have you back on the show again, and
we'll love
be
that.
Writing about Heartbroken Open in the February Power Couples issue, because you are certainly half or a whole power couple in yourself. So,
oh, thank you.
Very impressive. So for more information, you be sure to visit www.christinecarlson.com, and she'll be having actually a women's conference, which we didn't even get to talk about. But you know what? We'll have you back on to talk about your virtual conference. Maybe.
Oh, that'd be great. That's at Mother's Day, so that'd be awesome.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.